Freddy Krueger.
He still scares the life out of me in my sleep occasionally.
And welcome to the Fanboy Garage. I'm Chris Lasanti, joined by my co-host, the man of many functions and voices, Aaron Varola.
What's going on, y'all? If I'm a little gassy, if I start burping before we get the show started, it's not my fault. I had like 4 glasses of seltzer before we started, so a lot of bubbles coming up. How's everyone doing, y'all?
All right.
Damn, that's a good way to start a show.
Sure,
I'm already
is.
Like crying with laughter. We did like nothing. I mean, people are gonna be like, "What's wrong with these guys?"
Yeah. Wait till we release the blooper reel down the road.
Yeah. Seriously.
Yeah.
Lots of stuff to discuss. Lots of news flying around the past couple of days. We are officially knee deep in the fall TV schedule. But yeah, let's dive right in.
You Titans. Saw Titans, and I know you had some things you wanted to say about that and DC Universe.
So, okay. The first thing I'll say about Titans is I get that this is a pilot, right? And that there's still a lot to be discovered with the characters and the show and all of that. I have to say I wasn't overly impressed by Titans, and it could come, you know, from a couple of things. It could come from, the trailer, which I was automatically turned off by the trailer when it first launched. Because I was just wondering like what kind of, you know, the gratuitous violence in the trailer, the F Batman. I'm like, what is this? And obviously they're gearing a show for the adult audiences, and it's very much that. I mean, but the acting is subpar, I'd say, and some of the the violence is very real. I mean, I remember like when the trailer dropped, some folks came to the defense and said, "Oh, you know, it may not be exactly what it looks like," but no, it's definitely uber violent. Like, just to give you some examples, and I hope by the time folks are listening to this, I'm sure that they would have already seen the first episode because the second episode is released. So we're going to get into spoiler territory here, but Robin legitimately drags some dude's face across a wall. I'm talking a la Frank Castle in The Punisher, and like scrapes his face off. So he does that to one dude. Mind you, he's already killed about three of them. And then the final guy, he takes his the guy's in the car, and he grabs his head, and he breaks his window, and then grabs his head, and then drags his face again over the shards of glass that are sticking up in the on the side window. Which, like, if it's tempered glass, that's not really going to do anything. But anyways, yeah, and he just like basically cuts his face up, like, again, like Punisher. So there's stuff like that. The story, again, I know that we're just getting started, but the what's her name, Starfire? Yeah. Her story is just convoluted. I don't know what's going on. It's mostly about Raven and Dick, and a little bit of the Starfire character, but again, that's kind of like a hodgepodge mess. And then we just get the faintest of glimpse of Beast Boy towards the end of that. So, I'll tune in because I want to keep up with the conversation and see where it goes. But ultimately, I know that I'm just going to do this for you guys, not because I'm ultimately interested. As I've said to some folks before, and I was commenting with our friends over at Batman on Film, but this feels like Zack Snyder directed an episode of Gotham. Like, legit. And I said that when the trailer dropped, and I'm legit confirming that, in my opinion. It feels like that to me. It's just not – it's not vibing with me, to be honest with you. So,
yeah.
I don't know. I know you caught a little bit of it.
But. I saw this episode, and I just didn't – I didn't like it. Although I don't know that I agree with the Zack Snyder comparison, in the sense that one thing about Zack Snyder is, regardless of, you know, whether you were happy or not with the direction that he took the characters themselves, you know, he's got a great eye for these epic, you know, shots, and there's some really beautiful moments and shots and photography in his movies. This thing, I just felt cheap to me. Like, it felt like a higher end, like fan film to me. That's kind of
the funny. That's what Bill Jettarini said of Batman Film. He said the exact same thing.
Yeah,
he was like, and that, he goes, and that's not even doing it justice.
Yeah, I just it just didn't do anything for me. It felt flat. I mean, I'll give it a, you know, I'll watch a couple more of these episodes just to see. Yeah. You know, I don't look at this, though, as a pilot, in the sense that, like, a lot of times when you're talking about traditional television, you know,
what you're going to say.
Yeah, you film a pilot. Yeah, which is meant to sell the show to networks. And oftentimes the pilot sometimes can be even a little disconnected from what the regular show actually becomes, because it's just more of a template. Now, this wasn't being sold to anything. I mean, this was made specifically for this DC Universe streaming service. So this is really just a first episode. So I don't know how dramatically this thing is going to change. It's just not, I didn't really get into any of the characters. I agree with you, the acting. I think you were kind to the acting. I think it's wooden at best.
Yeah.
I don't like the guy that's playing Dick Grayson.
Yeah, neither do I.
I just, he seemed to have, like, he was either just monotone or brooding.
Yeah.
Like, those were his two emotions.
Yeah, and there's some interesting stuff. I don't want to say interesting because it's not really interesting, but you know, there's a scene where he's in his apartment and he's cleaning off the blood from his Robin costume, and he's meticulously, like, kind of like, you know, putting it back together. And then he just stops for a second and he gets pissed off and throws his Robin symbol or the R at his punching bag. I'm like, that was ridiculous. I don't really understand that.
Yeah.
And the other thing I was saying to myself, I was like, did he get hit at all when he was fighting those dudes? I don't really, he probably did, but he ended up with some serious bruises. on his body. Yeah, I mean, it feels like it's trying to take a little bit of that Daredevil vibe from it, but just not. It just doesn't feel authentic.
No,
to the universe. You know what I mean?
Yeah, a lot of stuff felt forced. It definitely doesn't feel. And I know people are saying, "Oh, you know, these are different versions of the characters, or there have been different versions of the characters, and they're telling a specific story," and that's okay. I mean, violence didn't necessarily bother me. I just thought it came across as cheap.
Yeah.
I just didn't find the characters interesting.
They kind of throw you right into it.
Yes, they very much do. And maybe we'll get more of the, you know, backstories and whatnot as the show progresses. But I at no point watching this episode did I say, man, I can't wait for these guys to eventually get together and become this team.
Yeah.
If that's even what they're going to build towards. You know, I mean, I would assume they will at some point.
Yeah, I just didn't like any of these.
Yeah, I didn't like any of these people. And I don't think that that's the vibe. These are the heroes of the story. So I don't think that's really the vibe you should be getting.
I mean, are they heroes? I mean, like,
I would think so.
Like, well, I mean, okay, so, you know, you've got Robin killing people in an alleyway. You've got Starfire burning people to statues. You've got Raven basically jumping into some dude's body and then expelling herself in a pile of blood. The only soft character in this is Beast Boy. All he wants is to play some Xbox. And he's like stealing Xbox games. And, you know, I know nothing of these characters. I mean, I know Robin, obviously. I know Dick Grayson. I don't really know Raven. I don't really know Beast Boy and Starfire. But, you know, it's for me coming into this, it's just not a good way to get me kind of hooked into them at all.
Right.
And you know, just to walk, I don't want to say walk back my comments, but to kind of like clarify, like it's not the visual sense of Zack Snyder. It's more of like the way that he choreographs a fight scene and some of the like fantastic strength and stuff like that folks have, like that kind of vibe, you know, like Batman being able to take, you know, with his grappling gun, a huge crate and throw it into somebody's head. I mean, Dick does that with somebody's body. Like he takes. Shoots his grappling hook into somebody and then throws him back into a car. So that's the kind of stuff I'm meant to say. And just his, like, you know, Zack Snyder has a flair for violence. I mean, you think about 300, BVS. I wouldn't say Man of Steel so much, but yeah, those two films in particular. So that's what's coming across to me. It's as if he took that element, that those Zack Snyder elements, and sort of placed them on top of Gotham.
Yeah, I actually thought they were more Punisher Warzone-esque in the sense that it was just so over the top and ridiculous that it was like, but not even in the fun way that movie.
Yeah, like Dredd. Like Dredd is that way.
Although, well, I actually like Dredd a lot, but yeah. I don't know. We'll have to see. I know you had some thoughts though on DC Universe though as a concept and how they're choosing to release these episodes.
Yeah, so that's problematic to me actually. I think they are really putting it on people to stick with the show. Because they're releasing each episode every week and it's kind of a different model. And so, you know, Chris, I don't know if Star Trek Discovery is a week by week episodic streaming bit of content. Is it like that?
It is, yeah. So CBS All Access set the blueprint for this.
Because
Star Trek Discovery and the other original series that are on CBS All Access, they get released in more of the traditional broadcast style where it's an episode per week and with even a break in between. At one point. So it's not binged. You know, it's not like Netflix. It's not like Hulu. It's not like Amazon. And DC Universe is taking the same tack. Now, my theory on this is, you know, these services, CBS All Access, DC Universe, they are not Netflix and Hulu and Amazon. So with those services, you know, people just use them to find content to watch. And there's so much original and new content now on Netflix and Hulu and Amazon that you're not going to lose people. People aren't necessarily going there just for one show, right? Mm-hmm. They're going there for, they're just going to find a show every week if they have to and just binge that show. Right. Whereas with CBS All Access and DC Universe, you're talking about one or two shows here that they're using to drive that service, aside from the older content, which you can find in other places, and it's, that's not the main selling point. Ultimately, the main selling point has to be these new shows. It would not make a lot of sense to just have everything up there at one time. And then you just basically people could subscribe for a month and then cancel. I mean, you could still do that if you're not somebody right. that wants to watch the episodes right away. You could wait for them all to be done, get your monthly subscription in, watch them all, and then be done with it until the next season starts. But they know that the type of fan that's going to pay for that type of a service is going to, you're going to want to be watching these episodes as they happen. Right.
Right.
So
right.
that's what they're hoping for. And that's what I'm assuming is, you know, the reason why they've gone with that model for this as well.
Yeah. I mean, it was weird to me. I'm not going to lie. Because I was, you know, I was awake. I was like, okay, let's see what the next episode has in store for me. And then I was like, oh, it's not available.
Yeah.
So I have to wait. I have to digest this and maybe hate it a little more. I don't know. But I mean, that's the other thing. I mean, could, if it doesn't get any better, do people just drop out? I mean, some, I would imagine in the instances when you can binge it all, you know, sometimes the sum is better than or greater than all of its parts, right? And you're kind of like, all right, yeah, that was an okay show. Like, that wasn't bad. It had its rough patches. But, you know, if you end up with three episodes in this block, like this happened to me with American Horror Story. I was watching it and I'm like, three or four episodes in, I'm like, I don't really like this anymore. And then after I dropped off, they were like, oh dude, like the next, after, you know, after the next episode, you know, it gets so much better. And I'm like, well, damn, you know what I mean? So I don't know. I guess it's all about preference. And if you're cool with not binging, awesome. But yeah, you're going to have to wait for this one. I don't know how many episodes this series is. So we'll have to see how it moves along, but and what the conversations are week to week.
Yeah, and I also think that you know, to your point about, you know, I think that what it does do though is it generates a little bit more conversation.
I agree with that.
You know, what you're doing is, like, if you think about what happens with weekly television. What do you do, right? You watch an episode and then you're talking about it. You're talking about it with people at work. You're talking about it with people, you know, on the phone, online, whatever, your friends. When you binge watch a show, you binge it all in one shot. You sometimes can lose some of the nuances of that show.
Yeah.
And then you just wind up talking about it, like, in one weekend, you can talk to all of your friends about the entire show and then you move on. You don't want to talk about it again for another year. When you're doing it more like TV style, you're going to get some of that week-to-week conversation now. And that's what Star Trek Discovery, I thought, was really effective with. And they did an after show, and they had a podcast that would talk about the episodes, and people would get to digest the episode talk about the episode because there was a lot of stuff to each episode.
Yeah.
So whereas if you binge it, I think a lot of stuff would get lost. So I think there's pros and cons to both, you know, but it's really hard to say. I mean, you know, look at what's happening with Netflix right now where Iron Fist gets canceled.
Yeah, that's a shame.
You know, I don't think they formally canceled the Defenders because I don't think they needed to because it's not a regular series, but I don't know that we're ever going to see another Defenders
I don't think so either, and I don't think Danny Rand is, you know, the character of Iron Fist is gone, so to speak. I mean, there's so much intersection between these characters anyway. I mean, Misty Knight felt like she showed up more in Iron Fist than she was in Luke Cage. That's an exaggeration, but still, she was quite a visible member of the Iron Fist crew.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's going to be a lot of that cross pollination, and I'm sure, and who knows, maybe they'll create another show, you know, Power Man and the Iron Fist, or like Heroes for Hire, or something like that. You know what I mean? Where they get to pair the two together.
Yeah, I mean, it obviously, you know, we have to assume that the numbers for Iron Fist weren't up to whatever Netflix was hoping they would be.
I mean, I enjoyed it. I'm still not finished with it because I'm like, you know, I'm on a slow burn with this one. I'm not binging it. Maybe I'll watch an episode a night. But I, you know, I, and we've talked about this a little bit, but it, you know, it's loads better than the first season, which isn't really saying a lot, but it was a good story. And they, you know, the fight sequences were way better. And, you know, I really like, Meacham, what's his name? The older brother. I thought they wrote him perfectly. And Danny's a lot better, and Colleen Wing is amazing. And there's just some really cool stuff that's going on.
Yeah. I just think that, you know, they introduced the Punisher, and now the Punisher has his own show, which was well received. Yeah. And now you have Daredevil, and you still have Jessica Jones, and we assume Luke Cage will get a season 3. So it's like all of a sudden now you have these extra characters, and it's like, well, you don't really need the weak link anymore.
Right.
You know, as far as numbers are, you have 4 shows that people seem to be enjoying. And, even Netflix. I mean, look, I said this on Twitter the other day. You know, Netflix hemorrhages money on original content, because they realized early on that that was ultimately going to be the future as these content providers came out with their own streaming services.
Mm-hmm.
Because now, you know, look at what they're losing, right? They're losing a lot of the Disney content, and eventually they won't really have any of it. So, mm-hmm. you know, if you're Netflix, without the incentive of having like the MCU stuff, like how patient are you going to be now with these Netflix shows?
Yeah. And who knows, maybe Iron Fist could make an appearance on the Disney streaming service. Who knows? I mean,
yeah, I don't know how. I mean, I believe these are co-productions with Netflix, so I'm not sure. Could they do their own? I mean, they have the rights to the character,
right?
In theory, Disney. So I think sure they could probably do their own thing, but
sure.
I mean, I don't know that. I don't know that it's going to be that big of a draw for them.
Who knows?
But, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's streaming services popping up here and there. I mean, we were just talking offline before we started this episode. Warner Media is another streaming service that is coming up. It was just announced last week. And that will include some content from HBO, some Looney Tunes content, some of the Harry Potter stuff, even some of the DC Universe stuff. So, you know, for folks like us, you know, are these must-haves? I don't know. You know, but literally it's going to be, you know, you've got your DC, you know, only content in this bucket, this streaming bucket. And you've got your sort of mix mash of like Warner Brothers stuff in this other bucket. Then you've got your Disney one in that bucket over there. And then you got your Netflix, which is like basically pulling from, well, I mean, Netflix is going to end up losing, like, you know, rights to some of these things, because if Warner's has its own streaming service and Disney has its own streaming service, and they're going to want to pull all their content to their channels, quote unquote. So Netflix becomes just their own content driven. Like maybe it's like the indie, that involves Netflix's approach to creating stuff. So who knows what's going to happen in the next 5 years?
Yeah.
Have a streaming service for something.
Yeah, and I mean, people start to freak out because they're like, oh, well, you know, I don't know, like a la carte means I'm going to wind up paying more than I paid when I had cable. But the thing about that is, but you know, before everybody freaks out, is that one, you know, you got to realize first with cable how much you're paying for that you're not watching, right? So that's the first thing. I mean, you have 200 mm-hmm. channels and you probably watch 10 of them. The other thing you have to realize is that you got to look at it in the sense that the majority of the people are going to have Netflix, Amazon, and Hulu, right? these other services, these like the DC service, the Disney service, this Warner thing, like these are niche things. Even CBS All Access to a point. They're niche things that are servicing a particular fan base. Not a lot of people are going to be running, you know, to subscribe to these services. People like us will be. But we're going to have to pick and choose which ones are worth it, when they're worth it. But at least we'll have the flexibility to jump in and out of things.
Yeah.
You know, that's really the key. It's all about flexibility. And if you want to look at it like in a television analogy, think of Netflix, Amazon, and Hulu as like the broadcast networks.
Right.
And think of, or the major networks. And then think of like DC Universe and these other services as like your HBOs, your Stars, your Cinemaxes, or, and even maybe lower than that. Right. You know, not everybody's going to have them. Everybody's going to have, you know, a handful of channels that are everybody gets. And then it's up to everybody else to pick and choose different tiers to what extra content that they really want.
Yeah, but see, the thing is, now what's going to happen, though, is, you know, because these are being driven by major studios, these sort of like, say, Tier C, they're going to take, I'd imagine, now it's all speculative, but they're going to force Netflix's hand, right? Because if Netflix is the catch-all, and, you know, so they've got content from this studio and content from that studio, all of which they've negotiated. But if those negotiations are no longer being had because they've got their own streaming services, you're going to have all of them if you're going to want to watch a movie from a Warner Brothers studio or a movie from a Disney studio, because that those things may not appear anymore on Netflix.
Yeah, I mean, I still think, though, these content provider-specific streaming services are still in their infancy. Yeah. And I think that ultimately the numbers will determine, you know, which way totally. This thing goes. Because if 100 million people are subscribing to Netflix and 500,000 people, and that's probably an overestimate, are subscribing to something like DC Universe.
Right.
I mean, you want your content to be seen, right? That's the key. So, I mean, eventually you got to make a decision as to which way you want to go with this stuff. Right. And, yeah. I still don't think that there's going to be a day where it makes sense at all for these streaming services to pull all of their content off of the big players, you know, just to keep it on their service if the numbers don't bear out. Because, you know, you're better off. It's kind of like being the lowest rated show on like a network that's doing really well. Like you would rather be on there than on a small network because there's synergy there. Mm-hmm. You know, your show is going to get promoted during the NFL or go during like the highest rated shows and whatnot. So you want to have that type of synergy. And it's the same thing. Like if you have all these people that are subscribing to Netflix and the casual viewers are just flipping through to find content, well, your content could be there. But if somebody doesn't even know DC Universe exists, like they're not going to go and subscribe to that just to watch your show. So I think eventually there will be more cross-pollination between these streaming services, and it isn't going to solely be a la carte, because I can't see how that ultimately will make sense, especially unless we want to get real niche stuff, you know, like real, like CBS All Access works because it's CBS and because Star Trek is one of those shows that it has a big enough audience where it can move the needle for a streaming service, but it won't necessarily do giant numbers on a broadcast network. So it's kind of perfect for that. I don't know that, like, Titans, for instance, what we saw out of Titans is going to move the needle for anything.
Yeah, and I mean, it's funny when we talk about that, because then you look at what Disney is starting to plan with their service, and they've got, you know, The Mandalorian sort of leading the charge for their Star Wars-related content, which will live on that streaming service, and they are doing some heavy behind the scenes promotion. You know, Jon Favreau is lighting things on fire with his Twitter account and sort of dropping clues and hints of things to come from that show, which is getting all types of people excited for The Mandalorian, me included.
Yeah.
I'd say in the next year and a half, you know, 2020, it's going to be a really interesting landscape. as we sort of work our way through those streaming services.
So. I actually think that Disney streaming service is going to be a completely different beast from something like DC Universe, because, you know, it's one thing. It's great to have episodes of the Super Friends and episodes of Wonder Woman and stuff like that. It's another thing to have, like, the Pixar library. Right. And the Star Wars library and the Marvel library and just the hand-drawn traditional Disney animation. Yeah. I mean, broad appeal. You're appealing to people who are from babies to, you know, older adults with that type of a service. That service could become its own thing altogether, where you know, some people might look at that versus Netflix. They might not even look at the DC service as like a secondary niche thing.
Right, right. I mean, yeah, that's going to be a beast. That's going to be a beast. I mean, think about all of the, you know, the way that they've tapped into the vault and they're taking some of their classic animated films and turning them into live action. So all of those films are going to be available. Plus, and then they'll open the vault and you'll get HD versions or Blu-ray or, you know, 4K versions of their older movies, which they're probably restoring. Hell, if you give me the OT... the Star Wars original trilogy in its, like, original form. Like, dude, lose my mind.
Yeah, I mean, I think we mentioned that, right, on another episode. Well, that would be, like, a perfect thing. But I think even without new content, that Disney streaming service becomes a beast. But with new content, now I think you almost have to talk about it in the as part of one of the big boys of these streaming services. I mean, we'll have to see what it looks like when it actually rolls out, but in theory, it could be a legitimate just beast of a streaming service.
Yeah. Cool. All right. So I think let's switch some gears here. Let's touch on our topic from last week, which was James Gunn. So, and this will be a real quick one because one of the biggest things we talked about last week was, well, at least, you know, I had commented about it, was that there was no control of the narrative, right? So DC was being quiet as rumors continued to swirl out of control about James Gunn joining the DCU to pen and potentially direct Suicide Squad 2. Well, shortly thereafter, I think it was on, maybe it was the Thursday, after our episode dropped, the DC, I don't even know what it's called, their YouTube channel it's a YouTube channel, I guess, where they announce all their news with Tiffany Smith.
Okay.
She came out and said officially, James Gunn is joining the DCU and will be writing and directing, or potentially directing, Suicide Squad 2. So I guess it's official,
right?
To a degree. I mean, there's been no official statement from anyone upon high. So, I guess it's a real thing.
It's a real thing. I mean, unless
until it's not,
right? Exactly. It's a real thing until it isn't. I mean, who knows? Maybe the, you know, ink hasn't dried on contracts or whatever, or maybe DC is just waiting for a specific time to make the announcement, or for him to maybe turn in a draft first.
I mean, Joss Whedon was writing and directing Batgirl, and look at where that ended up.
Right. And that was never, I mean, that was again one of those things where, you know, but yeah, I mean, it seems like he's at least taking a crack at this.
Sure.
And I guess if they like whatever he comes up with, then, you know, he'll have free reign probably.
Yeah. And I'm really not going to go into any more details. I mean, you guys know how I feel about this. So,
but
One thing we did
mention last week was that we thought it'd be a good idea. Maybe he did a Flash movie instead of a Suicide Squad movie. And there was some news kind of about this Flash movie that came out. Now that now it's interesting, when I first saw the story, the way that some of the headlines were being interpreted was like, well, the Flash is being pushed back to 2021. Then I actually read the article. I think it was in Variety. And the article basically is like, well, so Ezra Miller is going to be tied up with the Fantastic Beast stuff, and it doesn't look like they're going to be able to begin filming a potential Flash movie until maybe the, you know, late 2019 or 2020 or whatever it was. And that means that we're probably not going to get the movie until 2021. So it was all like speculation based on schedules and the fact that they haven't started filming yet. So we haven't even, there's never been a new release date for this Flash movie. So like the idea that it's like, well, we don't know when this thing is coming out. To say that it's going to come out in 2021, I don't even think is accurate.
Yeah.
It's just speculation on when they think the earliest it could possibly come out would be based on what they're just looking at in other, with other
things. Yeah, and then there were some reports about the scripts being tinkered with and that the studio didn't want to rush the directors in terms of, they want them to get it right, essentially. Sure. I said it on Twitter, but this is going to become Warner Brothers' Gambit movie, where it's just going to keep on getting postponed, and then this director drops out, and then these new directors step in, and blah, 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 or this person, whatever. And if I'm being completely honest, I mean, I saw Game Night. It was okay. It was funny, but it wasn't like, I don't know, I didn't lose my mind over it funny. And so a lot of people have been hyping up the two directors. Jeez, there goes that Seltzer again. they've been hyping up those directors. It's like, oh, they're coming off of the hot Game Night film. And I'm like, all right.
Well, I don't necessarily worry too much about stuff like that. Like I always use, like I said, you know, what were the Russos doing before Captain America: The Winter Soldier? Into that.
Good point.
You know, so it's not. I mean, yeah, their resume is not gonna knock you over, but it, you know, I don't know that I would necessarily say that they can't direct a good Flash movie. No, it's just right now, will we even get the Flash movie?
I know. I mean, and if they're so hot, what if they're just like, nah, we're going to move on to something else?
Well, that's the other thing. Like, they're talking about in the article how Ezra Miller's busy with stuff, but like, if this, we're talking 3 years from now, like, I mean, yeah, these guys are going to have some things going on, I would hope or imagine, yeah, right, for them? So who knows at that point if it's even going to be them?
Yeah.
2 years from now when they have to start filming this thing. Or if that's even if it's a plan to start filming this thing.
Yeah, I'm not even sure. I you know, I think it'd be great to see that. But who knows how quickly it's going to end up coming out. Or at all.
Yeah, I still think that, but again, you know, it's funny. Yet again, we've spent more time now talking about, when it comes to DC, we spend more time talking about the movies that are may or may not come out than we do about the movie that is about to come out in 2 months.
Not if you've been keeping track of the CW. People losing their minds over a black suited Superman, and people are going ape, you know what, over it. Gosh, man.
Yeah, I didn't realize this was such a... So I've been a little disconnected the past couple of days, but I didn't realize... I did know there was some stuff because I saw some of your tweets, but I finally saw this picture and I was like, wow, this has got people up in arms?
Yeah, apparently people... So, all right, I'll just give you guys some context. So CW is, I guess, filming their Elseworld crossover, which they just released a poster for, which has Stephen Amell dressed up as the Flash and Grant Gustin as the Green Arrow. So it's some interesting stuff there. So obviously their roles are being flipped and reversed. But there was a picture released of both Grant Gustin and Stephen Amell standing side by side Tyler Hoechlin as Superman, and he is dressed in a black Superman costume with a silver S, and people, for some reason, man, the venom and the toxicity just came spewing out of their mouths. Oh, it looks like a ironed on Superman S, and CW needs to get their budgets upped, and this is what we're waiting for, is crappy looking Superman and subpar actor. And I'm like, wow, This, like, calm down. People are, and it's literally his suit in black.
Yeah.
It's like what he wears in Supergirl in black. I don't understand.
I mean, again, and I don't know why people just don't learn their lesson. People are going to continue to get up in arms over candid set photos that are unfinished, unpolished. You know, they're bare bones. They're not dressed up at all. They're always complaining about costumes and stuff like that when they see it in those contexts. And then, you know, more often than not, when you see it in the movie or the episode of the TV show, you're like, oh, okay, yeah, that doesn't really look that bad. So, I mean, I don't know. I find it hard to believe that the suit is going to look exactly like that when it comes on the screen.
It's a TV show.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, you're not going to get a Zack Snyder-type costume. You know what I mean? Like, you can see in Supergirl's costume that they took elements of the Snyder Superman costume and sort of wove it into her outfit. And Superman's costume is also very, you know, has that vibe, but it also has that comic book feel to it as well. It's got the weird belt thing going and the cape that's like, you know, on his shoulders, not like on his neck. It's kind of like embedded into the shoulders of his costume, like that kind of look, like the Thor thing.
But you're right. It is just it's a black and silver version of his, the suit that he had. Now, if he hated that suit, you know, I don't remember a major outcry at the time over it, but if you hated that suit, then yeah, you're going to hate this suit.
Right.
But I don't know that it was anything to be up in arms about. I mean, I know he is your pick for Batman and so I know you have a special place in your heart for him.
I mean, I've only really seen him like in two things.
He played
Superman and I saw him in Road to Perdition.
Oh yeah. Well, it's a great movie.
It's a great movie.
Yeah.
Daniel Craig, amazing. Paul Newman, also amazing. Whatever, man. There's people, fans, calm down. Please. Please. There's so much other stuff happening in the world for you to get up in arms about. Save your energy. Don't waste it on a TV Superman costume. Please.
Right.
Just don't do it. Leave it alone. It's fine.
Yes.
You don't have to watch the show. Okay?
No. and less people are watching those shows with every season. So
yeah, I mean, I get it too. And I mean, it's like this is their representation of Superman now, right? Because Cavill isn't around. And, you know, people love Superman. And they're just like, and this is what I'm dealing with. I get it. I get what you're saying. But just... You don't, you know.
Well, wait to see it in the episode.
All of that Venom, you might not ever see a Superman because who knows? A Warner Brothers executive could be reading all these tweets and going like, this is exactly why we put Superman on the shelf.
Yeah.
Where, you know, here's the happy-go-lucky Superman and everybody hates him because of his costume, so we didn't get it right again. So maybe we need to just put him on the shelf, like, indefinitely.
Yeah, I just think you should just wait to see it in the episode. Then if you hate it, then let everybody know.
Yeah.
I mean,
the Batwoman costume was awesome.
That looked but that was a promo. That was a finished kind of promo picture. This was literally a selfie. Not really, but it was a candid snapshot of them on a set. I mean, that's
shot on an iPhone.
Yeah.
Well, anyway.
So it's like if you get the Batwoman costume that right, then let's assume that the Superman costume is going to look a little bit better when it's, you know, finished.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So speaking of things that looked a little bit better, I did see the Glass trailer.
All right.
And I loved this trailer. I cannot wait for this movie.
Yeah, same. It, man, the stakes are high. So it looks like if we were interpreting this trailer, it looks like the nuts have been released from the nut house. So essentially, Samuel L. Jackson's character, Glass, looks like he's been sort of like in a catatonic state, being doped up and whatever. And he gets a taste of the beast, and ultimately uses him to be, you know, to escape because he really wants David to rise to the challenge. David being Bruce Willis's character, because ultimately there was no equal for him. And yeah, I mean, he plays mastermind, man. He wants these two, you know, the villain and the good guy to just go head to head. And it looks like David tries to stay in this facility and then ultimately is like, the beast is gonna kill people and yada yada, so I gotta get out of here. It looks crazy.
Yeah,
it looks,
and it's
really, really good.
It's really interesting because, you know, Unbreakable was a movie that you know, it was one of those movies where when you finally got the ending, you're like, oh my God, this has been like a comic book superhero movie that I didn't realize.
Yeah.
And then with Split, that was very much like a psychological horror movie. And then at the end, you're like,
I had no idea that was connected.
Right. Yeah. Oh, wait, this is connected. And now this trailer seems like it's really bringing it home. Like, this is very much a comic book superhero good guys, bad guys movie.
Yeah.
You know, he even mentions in the trailer, like, oh, the bad guys are teaming up.
Yep.
And it's kind of cool how they've come full circle. Now, whether this was ever their original plan or his original plan, I have no idea. But you know what? It's working out. So I think this is going to be great.
Yeah, I'm going to say no. I'm going to say no.
Probably not. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure Unbreakable was meant as a one-off. Well, that's quality wise, but yeah,
The Happening.
Well, you've had a lot, yeah. The Last Airbender.
Yeah. No, but I'm stoked.
It's just funny that Unbreakable was this little like this small film that followed The Sixth Sense,
yep,
and kind of got forgotten about in between The Sixth Sense and Signs. It was sort of the forgotten M. Night Shyamalan movie to a lot of people. And it was one of those movies that, like, someone almost had to recommend it to you for you to want to watch it.
That's exactly how I kind of fell into it.
Me too, yeah. And then
someone was like, oh, it's a comic book movie that's not a comic book movie.
Right.
And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
What are you talking about? They're like, dude, just watch it.
I'm yeah. Like, right. But he's gotten a lot of mileage out of that. And, you know, it's rejuvenated his career. And, you know, who knows now? You're going to be able to watch those movies going back now with a different perspective, which I think is really cool. So it's going to make for a very interesting, at least trilogy for now.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. My wife and I, we saw Split and, she was like, God, such a crazy ass movie. Creepy. And then when we get the teaser, so here's the thing. I avoided the hell out of them. Somebody whose name is Mario Francisco Robles, when he was on his former podcast, was talking about Split, and I literally, and like he jumped into the spoiler, and I like ripped the headphones off of my head so fast that I almost smacked this woman on the train, and they're like looking at me like I'm crazy, because I didn't want to hear anything about Split, and because someone was like, oh, there's a twist, like it's like M. Night Shyamalan, you know, and back to form, and I was like, great. And then when I finally saw it, I was like, what? And I was like, this is linking all the way back to that movie. So, you know, we watched it, and I was trying to get my wife excited, and then she saw the scene. She's like, I don't really get it. And I was like, wait. So we watched Unbreakable, and she was like, wow. She's like, that is so cool. And she's like, it doesn't feel like a comic book movie at all. I'm like, it's technically not a comic book movie. But sure, it is. It's a comic book movie that wasn't meant to be a comic book movie. It ultimately became a comic book movie. So,
and
hey.
Now it surely is. So
yeah, that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we're looking forward to that. Speaking of other trailers, I did manage to catch a glimpse at the Hellboy trailer being released in April. And I got to say, it's a whole lot of meh. It kind of looks like Del Toro's movies, man. It's funny. It's got some like bits of humor, but it's not Ron Perlman. It's David Harbour. It's like, okay, but he looks like, kind of looks just like Ron Perlman.
Yeah, It's strange, the aesthetic, but I'm
so confused by their decision to make this movie without Del Toro and without the characters when his films are always meant to be a trilogy to some degree. So yeah, I don't, you know what, when it's released, I'm not going to spoil it for anybody, but when it's released, you guys check it out. And when you do see it, certainly let us know your thoughts, but I'm not looking forward to it. So
you're not looking forward to it.
I'm not.
Okay.
I'm not, because I really like the first Hellboy. I like both of them.
Yeah.
And it's a, you know, Del Toro has that creature design element, and you know, he immerses himself in those worlds, and I mean, just look at the stuff the man has made, like Pan's Labyrinth, Hellboy, why am I blanking
Blade
on the
2.
Blade 2 is good.
Blade 2 is good. Yeah,
I like Blade 2. Why am I blanking on the water one?
The Shape of Water. It's
Shape of Water.
Amazing,
brilliant
movie. Yeah,
brilliant movie. So you know, there's you want to hear my theory about Shape of Water? So, I'm sorry, this total side tangent, but you know, Michael Shannon's character, you saw the movie, right?
Yes.
So I have a theory for why his fingers fell off. Because he doesn't wash his hands after he pees.
Okay.
You saw that, you know, the scene.
I get it. I haven't really thought that much about it. Now I never want to think about it.
Gets his fingers infected from urine. Oh. Anyways. Right.
Good talk.
Yeah. Just got it off my chest. All right. So shall we jump into fan questions?
Yeah.
Is there anything else that we wanted to talk about before we get there?
I don't think so, right? That was pretty much it.
Okay.
So Ron Diesel, he basically asked about the Marvel Netflix shows, what's going on. We kind of addressed that already, but I just wanted to give him a shout out. So thanks for the question, Ron. I hope we answered that earlier.
Yeah,
in the show.
And for those of you guys listening, I mean, check it out this Friday, Saturday, 19th.
Friday.
Daredevil season 3 is released. That looks amazing. Vincent D'Onofrio is going to crush it again as Wilson Fisk, aka Kingpin. It just looks amazing. I'm watching some of the bits and pieces that they've been releasing. So that's going to be super cool to see.
Right.
So looking forward to everyone's reactions on that when they tune in.
All right. So, and Nathan Odinson, actually, we just mentioned trilogies, right, before with the glass thing. But Nathan Odinson asked, what's our top 5 favorite trilogies?
Top 5. Wow. Okay. You want me to go first?
Sure.
Okay, it's the Lord of the Rings, the original trilogy of Star Wars. It is the Dark Knight trilogy. That's 3. I'm going to say the Indiana Jones trilogy because...
Uh-oh. You know what? I thought of that, but technically it's not a trilogy anymore.
I know, but damn it, man. yeah. Yeah, man. What else? I do like the Matrix.
The whole thing?
Yeah, I can do all 3.
Oh, that's okay.
Fine. God, I feel like I'm missing another one.
Well, so
I'm definitely missing one that I had. I don't know.
I cheated because I came up with 8.
Jeez.
But since we had a bunch of duplicates, I'm just going to go through my whole list.
Okay, go for it. Go for it.
So I agree with, I had the original Star Wars trilogy. I had the Lord of the Rings. And I had the Dark Knight trilogy.
Yes.
Also on my list. Now, the ones you didn't have were the Evil Dead trilogy. Evil Dead, Evil Dead 2, and Army of Darkness.
Yeah, that's good.
I actually agreed with JRB. I have the Naked Gun trilogy on my list.
Oh, okay.
Love that.
Cool.
The 3 flavors Cornetto trilogy, which is the Edgar Wright, it's Shaun of the Dead.
Was it Hot Fuzz?
Hot Fuzz and The World's End. Love those. It's really not a technically a trilogy. I mean, it's a trilogy in theme, but it's not one story that carries over, but it counts kind of. So I'm going to put that on my list.
Okay.
Toy Story trilogy.
Yeah.
Love it. And the new Planet of the Apes trilogy.
Oh, someone else talked about that one. Yeah.
Yeah. So those,
yeah, that's a good one. Nice. Oh, and you know what? Here's one. Back to the Future.
Oh, yeah. There you go. I forgot all about that. Yeah.
Need that. Need that in my life.
There you go.
For sure. Oh, and actually, that doesn't work because it was a fourth movie. I was going to say The Avengers, but it's not.
Yeah, well, the ones that I left out that a lot of people use, like The Godfather, I don't like Godfather 3 at all, so I don't.
Yeah, but the first two are so good.
Yeah, but I just can't
sleep through the third one.
Well, but then it's not a great trilogy, though, right? It's just two great movies. And I didn't put, like I said earlier, I didn't put Indiana Jones because it's not a trilogy anymore. So whether you want to ignore the fourth movie or not, really can't.
What about X-Men?
Which trilogy, though?
So,
because there's been a couple of sub trilogies within, but like they've not ended well. If you look at them,
right.
If you take X-Men, X2, and Last Stand is a disaster. If you take First Class, Days of Future Past, and Apocalypse is a disaster. Yeah. If you look at the Wolverine movies, right, X-Men Origins Wolverine is a disaster, even though the Wolverine and then Logan were good, and Logan's great. But so they've not really been able to nail down a three, story arc that has worked completely anyway.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Now you have your answers.
There you go. So we got, so JRB... He said, if we were granted a one-minute sit-down with Kathleen Kennedy, Kevin Feige, or Walter Hamada and had the lasso of truth, who would it be and what would you say?
You want to go first?
Not really.
Did you haven't thought about this one?
No, I have. And I just – see, the thing is that 1 minute isn't not a lot of time. And especially if I have the lasso of truth.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I mean, I would put the lasso of truth thing aside for a second. Like, if I had 1 minute with, I would want it to be with Walter Hamada probably, because Kevin Feige, I mean, I kind of.
He talks a lot anyway.
He does, and I know exactly what he's all about.
Right.
Like, I don't think there's a lot of mystery or questions about what he's doing. And with Kathleen Kennedy. I mean, I like a lot of what she's done, so I don't know that I have... I mean, I know JRB said he'd ask her if they're ever going to get a solo sequel, because I know he's big on that happening.
Yeah, man. Wow. So JRB's been retweeting the heck out of people that are talking about Solo, and I love that about you, man. That's awesome. You know, I really do hope that they... Yeah, I think of a really cool way to bring Alden Ehrenreich back as Han Solo, because you're right. It should get another movie.
Yeah. I just think that Walter Hamada has the most – they're the most questions you could ask. But again, it's only 1 minute, and if I had the lasso of truth, I don't know what that one question would actually be. There's just so many. So it's tough, but I would probably say Walter Hamada. I just don't know what – I would have to think harder about what the specific question was or what I could get out in a minute that I would talk to him about. It would probably be something about Batman. I'd probably try to get him to admit what's going on with Superman.
You're right. There's a whole lot of speculation and question around what's going on with DC, and I'm sure there's lots of answers to be had. Because they don't really do a good job of talking about it, which they shouldn't, honestly. I mean, that's not a jab meant to be a jab to them. It's just that, you know, Marvel in Feige and Lucasfilm under Kathleen Kennedy kind of gives us the scale and scope of what they're planning for the next couple of years. And there isn't really much of that in DC's approach yet.
Yeah, actually, I'm looking now, you know, Nerdy Nick's Nook. He basically has he hit it on the head, I think, for Walter Hamada. He says, please share the near-term roadmap and how you see the DCU playing out. That's perfect. Bingo. That's what I would ask him.
Yep. And I would, I'd pick Kathleen Kennedy. Of course I'd pick Kathleen Kennedy. And I'd throw that lasso of truth on her, and I would say and ask her, you're not really going to plan on making an Obi-Wan standalone film, are you? If not, I'm going to put this rope around your neck. No, honestly, I would love to know where she plans on expanding the universe beyond the Skywalker trilogy.
Okay.
And it seems like we're getting a glimpse of that, you know, with the Mandalorian and all that, and where that who knows what, I mean, that's after the events of Return of the Jedi. So but still, it's a very linear, you know, timeline when you think about it, because they refer to it as after Return of the Jedi, which still puts you right back into the mindset of like, okay, it's a Skywalker thing, you know? So when you think of, you know, when they play that, they start plotting content in that timeline, you're always going to think about, well, there is a Skywalker somewhere. Like Luke Skywalker is starting his Jedi Knight Academy, his Jedi Academy. So maybe he could pop up somewhere. You know, maybe Sebastian Stan will get cast as Luke Skywalker in the show.
There you go. Who knows? Now you're really thinking.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, you're going to have to think a little bit more, because Ron Diesel actually did have a second question. He says, for the Nightmare on Elm Street franchise, rank the movies from best to worst, including the reboot.
Reboots at the way bottom. That shit was garbage.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, yeah, that was pretty bad.
That was horrible.
I'd almost have to put that in its own kind of side thing, because there's some garbage in that franchise too. So, I mean, for me, it's easy. The original is the one, right? The first one. Now, two is where it gets a little confusing for me, because I love Nightmare on Elm Street 3 a lot.
Right.
Always have. But
is that the Dream Master?
Dream Warrior.
Dream Warrior. That's
right. Dream Warriors, with where Nancy comes back and the kids from the...
Yeah, right. The church.
With the Dawkins song. Right. For those of you who remember that back in the day. So that's always been a favorite of mine. And... But New Nightmare is really good, and it was revolutionary, because it what ultimately is what led to Scream becoming a thing, like the self-aware movie within a movie concept. And I thought New Nightmare was very original at the time and very refreshing. So those two movies compete for the 2 and 3 spot with me.
Wow.
Then really by default, Nightmare on Elm Street 4, which is the Dream Master. Because Nightmare on Elm Street 5, The Dream Child, is terrible.
Oh, God.
It's awful.
So
and Freddy's Dead, The Final Nightmare, is bad. I hated that movie. With its awful 3D finale, which is just stupid.
Oh, I remember that, yeah.
And then you got the remake, which I don't really know where to slot that. Because
what about Freddy versus Jason?
Oh, I guess I have to count that. I like Freddy versus Jason.
That's actually not a new... That's not really a Nightmare on Elm Street, though.
I do like that movie, though. I mean, I know that it definitely has its flaws, but I'm actually kind of a fan. That's a movie that I watch, like, every time it's on.
I actually haven't seen it in quite some time, but I think it might be time for me to, like, I gotta find that. I don't even know where to find it.
Oh, I'm sure it's available. It's actually on TV quite a lot, to be honest
with
you. Is
it? Yeah. Yeah, but, you know, I don't want to watch it on TV.
No, but I know, but it's better than nothing.
I would agree with that. I'd say, you know, the first one is the first one. That's great. Should always be number one.
Oh, number... actually, I left out Nightmare on Elm Street
you
2.
Did?
I'm sorry. Nightmare on Elm Street 2 is not a very good movie, but it's probably after part 4 for me.
Ooh, there's some really creepy stuff that happens in the...
Yeah, I think it's more watchable than 5 and 6. So it slots ahead of... After 4 and ahead of 5 and 6 for me.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you on that. I'm with you on that. And the dude turns into a puppet. Oh, God. Or a pup. There's a puppet, Freddy.
Yeah.
I don't like that. Stop motion. Hella creepy.
So what do you got? You have one. The first one is one.
Yeah, 1, 3, 4265. The other one's way at the bottom. The remake is way, way at the bottom.
And what about New Nightmare?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, no, I'd say like New Nightmare is probably number three.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I like New Nightmare.
Yeah. All right.
I didn't like, actually, the one thing I didn't like about New Nightmare was his new makeup.
Right.
Very clean. Yeah. Not, it didn't look very burned victim-ish. I will say, though, that Freddy Krueger is my all-time scary character. Like, I'm 37 years old, and he still scares the life out of me in my sleep occasionally. I grew up with a just utter fear and like phobia of Freddy Krueger, and I can thank my cousin, who's a little older than me, for that, because he loved Freddy Krueger. He had his, that poster with the glove on his hand. I mean, glove on his hand. The glove on his face, and he really looks like a burn victim. Like the flesh is kind of like falling off of his face, and he had like a, he had the glove. My cousin had the glove, and he had like a light with Freddy's head on it. So all that, and he used to just turn off the lights and like come at us with the hat and the glove, all that crap. But yeah, I couldn't hear the music, man. It would like bring me to tears as soon as I heard the music or the little chant, the 1-2, Freddy's coming for you. Lose that my mind.
Yeah, we. We learn a lot about Aaron Varola here on the Family.
Yeah,
Garage.
Seriously. Sorry, that's a little tangent, but this is therapeutic for me. Thank you guys for listening. Yeah. tell me where to send the check.
Right.
But yeah, no, nah, man, that stuff really, really did a number on me.
All right. So thanks for bringing up those memories for Aaron, Ron.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll end with Tavo. He says, we know the age of the movie star will probably die with Tom Cruise. So who was your favorite all-time movie star, the one actor you had to go see at the movie theater?
Hmm. Certainly wasn't Tom Cruise. I'll say that.
Right.
You know, kid of the 80s, man. I grew up in the Schwarzenegger Stallone era. So any of those two dudes... even in their worst, you know, in their worst movies like Stop or My Mom Will Shoot from Stallone. I was in the theater. I saw that. Or Junior from Schwarzenegger, you know, those two guys equally.
You saw Stop or My Mom Will Shoot in the movie theater?
I did.
That's scarier than Freddy Krueger.
You know, I definitely did see that in the theater.
Wow. All right. I often wondered sometimes, like, who goes to see, like, that type of movie, like, in the theater. Now I know.
Jeez, thanks.
I get it. I mean, those guys, yeah, for me, too, like, growing up in the 80s, I mean, those were Schwarzenegger, especially, like, I would be there for everything. You know, one guy, though, Harrison Ford.
Yes.
Clearly a movie star. I don't know that I went to see everything he was in, but a lot of things he was in. For a while, Denzel Washington,
yeah,
was pretty high on my list.
You know what? I'm going to challenge this because I don't think the way of the movie star is actually dead.
Oh, that was going to be my next point. Whereas I don't know that it's going to, and I don't know that it's going to die with Tom Cruise either.
I don't think so. It's another Tom that it might die with. It's Tom Hanks. Yeah. I think that, like, that dude, like, consistently is in good movies.
Right.
So, and there's actually a whole bunch of guys.
Well, also,
actually,
it's the idea of a movie star, right? So, like, Brad Pitt's a movie star.
Yeah, but people don't, like, fall over themselves to go see his films anymore. But actually, I lie, though, because he, you know, DiCaprio is another one.
DiCaprio is a movie star, yeah.
Yeah.
And he's younger than Tom Cruise.
Right, right.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, people still go to the theaters to see him.
Yeah, and he doesn't make the type of movies either that, like a Tom Cruise, like he's not making like blockbuster action movies. You know, DiCaprio's usually more in like the Oscar contender, you know, smaller movie that might do well. Aside from Titanic, obviously.
And you know what? Like, hey,
but he's made, I mean, when you really think about his career, I mean, Catch Me If You Can is a great movie.
Yeah.
The Aviator was a great movie.
What's Eating Gilbert great?
I mean, he's made some really, really great stuff.
Inception. Inception. That's like,
yeah.
It's like my favorite movie. I didn't mind Shutter Island. I know a lot of people poo-pooed on Shutter Island, but I actually really enjoyed that movie. The Beach.
The Beach.
I mean,
yeah. So there are other
Django Unchained.
Oh yeah.
Come on.
I mean, so
I'm sorry. I keep on cutting you off, but one thing I'm going to say is I know where that question is coming from, and shame on him and shame on you, Thabo, because there's a superstar that people are like falling over themselves for, and folks are overlooking her. Margot Robbie, legit, people are falling over themselves.
Yes,
to get her in a movie.
Yeah, she is every bit the movie star.
She is a movie star.
Yeah,
absolutely. It's not, let Tom Cruise fall off a plane.
But now I'm wondering though, and I liked it. I mean, I thought you were actually going to give me the answer to this, but and maybe, you know, Thabo can give us the answer when he hears this. I'm wondering what it is about, like, why he specifically thinks that the age of the movie star is ending with Tom Cruise.
I agree with that. Yeah. Tell us. What is it? Is it that everything he touches turns to, like, box office gold? Because it doesn't. Because of The Mummy. The dude is having a second wind in his career for sure. But then again, I mean, I'm thinking of like movies that he's done that were duds. And I don't, you know, outside of The Mummy recently, I don't really think there was anything. I mean, he popped up in Tropic Thunder as, what was his name? Len Wiseman. It was awesome.
Yeah.
He didn't take himself too seriously when he, you know. He's going through a lot of stuff.
But I also think there's a new generation, too, that's building up of guys who I think if they pick the right roles. Chris Hemsworth, Evans. Yeah. Like, these are guys who I think if they wanted to be, you know, and they pick the right roles and choose for themselves, could very well be, like,
Michael
movie
B.
stars.
Jordan.
Yeah, Michael B. Jordan, another one.
For sure. Yeah. You know, Idris Elba.
Yeah,
these guys are not on the stature of Tom Cruise.
No, and maybe, I get it. But Tom Cruise, when Tom Cruise made Risky Business, he wasn't Tom Cruise either yet. You know what I mean? So
even Days of Thunder.
Yeah, it takes time for you to get to that status. So that's why I say, though, there's a young generation, though, that if they pick the right roles and have the career follows a certain trajectory, people could be talking about them 20 years from now as being, wow, can you believe these movie stars? These are real movie stars. Like, I kind of know what he's saying. I just don't know that it's necessarily ends with Tom Cruise.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah. What about Robert Downey Jr.?
Well, I was thinking of him too. The only thing is he's had, his career has gone, taken a lot of twists and turns, and it really wasn't until Iron Man that he really became like a movie star. And I mean, other than like the Sherlock Holmes movies, which are pretty good and have done well, like, I don't know that. I mean, his stuff has been like late in his career almost.
Right.
I mean, he, you know, definitely is a movie star, but he's not like a movie star in the, I think, the sense that Tavo's talking about, where it's like people are falling over themselves to go see Robert Downey Jr. in pretty much anything. They'll see him in the right role, but I don't know that he's just somebody that commands people's attention.
Right. The Rock.
Well, The Rock is just a star. I don't even know if I'd... I mean, he's just... yeah, The Rock is... he's a star, period. You know, whether he's wrestling, whether he's on TV, whether he's in a movie, people are just drawn to him.
Dude makes money.
Yes, like, he sure does.
I mean, he isn't... I mean, we'll see what happens to him in the next 5 to 10 years, but... I mean, I guess that's the thing, too. So, like, you know, Tom Cruise started early, like, super early in his life as an actor and has had some amazing movies. You know, Born on the 4th of July, Top Gun, Risky Business, you know, you name it. The Mission Impossible franchise. The guy's done so many different... Has he won an Oscar?
You know what? I don't... Has he? He should, to me. I thought his best role was in Rain Man.
Oh, that's good.
I actually thought that that was one of those movies where I was like, wow, I mean, Jerry Maguire, never been a particularly big fan of that movie, to be honest with you. Never bought the love story there. But, you know, he got a lot of attention for that. I thought his best acting work as a pure actor at the time was in Rain Man, which was a supporting role. And I think he was nominated for best supporting actor for that.
But
yeah.
Yeah, he's never won an Oscar. He did win a Golden Globe for Jerry Maguire.
Yeah.
Way back when. But yeah, I mean, he, yeah, I think from an acting perspective, like he's fine. He's good. I mean, you know, I think he's just at this point, any role he takes, it's Tom Cruise just being Tom Cruise with a new accent. Like, that's just kind of it, in my opinion. It's not, there really is no like muscle flex there. It's not like a Gary Oldman, you know what I mean?
Right.
But I need some clarity on that. I want to know where that comes from.
Okay.
Because I agree. I do think that there's a whole plethora of rising stars that are going to kind of take the place if and when, you know, he kind of steps out of the – if and when he retires, which probably won't ever happen. Mm-hmm. Cool.
All right. So well, I guess we'll get out of here now.
On that happy note. Let's do some plugs and get up out of here.
All right. So, of course, as always, you can go to thefanboygarage.com, check out the episode archive, check out our merch store, shop the Amazon Associates link. If you shop on Amazon, you can do it through our associate link on the website, and it'll help this show out. Also, you can send us an email if you're not on Twitter. You can email us directly on the Contact the Show button on the website as well. Of course, as always, as you've just heard, we love for you to join the discussion. It helps drive this show and drive some of the topics that we talk about on the show. So please join the discussion tweeting. You can find me at RealCLMighty.
And you can find me at Starting Sith as well on Twitter. And don't forget to check us out as well on Instagram at the Fanboy Garage. Yeah, and you can also tweet the show at the Fanboy Garage.
Yes.
So that's kind of it, guys. Thanks again, as always, for listening to us. And we'll catch you next week.
All right. Take care.